Silence.
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Prey Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 223 of Nerd Pride Radio.
223? That's the number of human beings you need to consume to gain immortality.
No, it's not. 223?
Really, have you consumed 223 human souls?
Okay, give or take.
All right, well, if it's take, then you haven't, so you wouldn't know.
Okay, maybe not. But, all right, anyway, 223. I have no response for that. 223. A Google search would have you believe that the Remington 223 ammo is the most interesting thing about this number. No! It turns out that 223 is the number of synodic months in a Saros.
So you just decided to just pick up some Latin on the side?
Yeah, no, 223 synodic months in a Saros, that's 18 years, 11 days, and 8 hours. So, ask me what a synodic month is. Okay,
what's a synodic
month? You're eating, I'll just tell you. A synodic month, it's a lunar cycle, it's how long it takes for the moon to go around the Earth and line back up with the sun's position from where it started. So, a synodic month. And then 223 of them make a Saros. That is an eclipse cycle, meaning the position of the Earth, Sun, and Moon lined up. If you get them all lined up straight for either a solar eclipse or a lunar eclipse, 223 synodic months later, one Saros later, they will be lined up in almost exactly the same position. Thus, you can use a Saros to predict eclipses. That's what it's for. And what do you call half a Saros? A sar.
Oh, this is going to be just a sadness.
Oh, yeah. That would be pretty good, too. But, no, it's a sar, which I don't know why you would need to know what... you need to use half a saros as a term. But, you know, it comes up often enough that they can't bother to say half a saros. They have to actually shorten it down to sar to save time.
I mean, really, the nucleus of a uranium atom is known as a barn. Well, I mean, the width of it, at least. That unit of measurement is called a barn.
Nice.
You know what half of that is called?
No.
An outhouse?
Nice. Again, I suppose physicists have uses for that.
We need 3 outhouses.
So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me.
How you doing?
I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus... there's like 7 other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to have on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. You'll also notice that I went through the intro perfectly that time.
Because he was reading it.
Because I was reading it, but still perfectly. As always, you're listening to the best smelling podcast on the internet. That's right, Nerd Pride smells exactly like... oh, I didn't write one down. What does Nerd Pride smell like?
Smells like Purina One for Purposeful Nutrition for Lifelong Whole Body Health Cat Food.
Yeah, I guess that's true. All right. It is now time for the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. It could have smelled like Casey's General Store Famous Medium Pizza. But
it could smell like goulash and Diet Dr. Pepper.
That's true. No, we're going to go with Purina One. Purposeful Nutrition for Lifelong Whole Body Health. Anyway, We're going to go right to the meticulously planned portion of the podcast, as opposed to this unorganized nonsense we're doing. This is the time for me and Aiden, where we talk about whatever has been on our minds for the last week. If something strikes us as interesting during the course of our busy, busy week, and it has been busy, add it to the master list, and the best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when we record. You lucky dogs.
I'm in the intro now?
Well, yeah, you get to do the spewing with me. Woo! It's awesome. So, look, let's get straight into it. We're going to start with the gaming table. I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die. Role-playing games, video games, board games, card games, any games. If it fits on my gaming table, I am here to share it with you. Yeah, you see what's on the list.
Yeah.
We're going to start with a video game. You want to go into it?
Yeah. Man, do we hate Ghosts and Goblins.
Oh my god, do I hate Ghosts and Goblins. We have been hate playing this game today because Aiden has always remembered that I've spoken very spitefully and bitterly about Ghosts and Goblins. And
it's so hard. I can't beat it.
The most impossible, stupid-ass game from my youth. And it was for the original Nintendo Entertainment System, and Ghosts and Goblins was three lives dead, and you just start the game over.
Well, I mean, there were checkpoints, technically.
Checkpoints, and you could earn a continue, so instead of three lives, you could have maybe six lives. And it was also, there were spots where it was possible to earn an extra life, but I think you could only, at most, there were only two extra lives to earn. So at most, you would get five lives total, plus a continue. But really, the thing is that when you get up to level 5 out of 6, there's only 6 levels. When you get up to level 5, for example, the only way to get good at it is to keep playing it over and over. Well, every time you die, you're starting all the way back over from level 1, and you have to play through all that crap at the beginning all over again. And it gets to the point where you're so overconfident about levels 1 and 2 that you just kind of you half-ass them because you're in a hurry to get through them.
And then you half-ass them, and then you die.
And then you die, and then you die some more. So, in order...
Long story short, I downloaded an emulator, and then downloaded Ghosts and Goblins, so Dad could play it again and relive his...
Yeah, but it's more than that. Aiden got the joy of playing with me.
God, I hate it.
Oh, I don't know how many times...
Dad was cooking in the kitchen.
This is the game I use when I want to teach my kids how to swear. Because
Dad was cooking in the kitchen, and several times I'm sure he could hear me.
Oh god, he was just
shouting.
Oh, I don't know how many times playing this thing that I had to yell up, I hate this fucking game. I hate it. I can't. Oh my god. And then start over because there's something compelling about it that I have to keep going, but it just angers me. So Ghosts and Goblins, man, if you want some fun, I say that without sarcasm. Go download an emulator for the old NES and get yourself some Ghosts and Goblins and have some fun. It's really good.
Recommended emulator is Nestopia.
That's the one we're using is Nestopia. And it is playing exactly like I remember it. I mean, exactly. So,
unfortunately.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, it does not get easier. So, all right. And then the other thing...
Is our gaming table constant?
Is the... Yes. Just wanted to mention some Godball that we're still doing development. If you are not in on Godball and you would like to be, you can certainly come on over the forums and join us, and I'll let you in. Because here's the deal, is that Godball, I've just been super inspired lately, and we're doing a lot of development, and we did a playtest this week that was really good. I scored a point. It felt right. I mean, look, obviously balance is going to take some time and we need the cards to be worked out. There's all sorts of stuff to work on, but the game felt so good. And it's like gotten to the point in the last 2 weeks or so that when I go check my forums, because I check my forums every single day and have for years and years. And now it's at the point where every day when I check the forums, the very first thing I do is roll down to the development forum to see if there's anything new about Godball and if we've got any new ideas. And, you know, it's usually Andrew and it's Dave and it's Flame and, you know, people who have played a lot and are into the development. But anybody, I'm just looking for anybody to just add something new because I'm so excited to talk about it and I put in a lot of my own stuff, but man, it's always cool when someone throws out something that I hadn't thought of yet, and it inspires you. And anyway, Godball's getting exciting, so if you want to join us, join us.
All right.
And now it's time for Trappin' Wits. Musical interlude here. This is where we're going to put in some music, but we've been looking, and I can't come up with the perfect song to represent Trappin' Wits. So, your job, listener...
Man, isn't that kind of like...
is to give us a song to put in here... And then next week, we'll do a Trappin' Wits where we go back and say, oh, you know what we should have played? And then we'll play your song because you're smart. We're dumb. All right? And we appreciate you. Unless you've got an idea.
No.
See? We're out. All right. So now, music, music, music. Okay, music's done. Whew. You ever think of that perfect line or comeback, but by the time you do, it's way too late? Yeah, that's Trappin' Wits. But when it happens to us, we have a podcast that lets us take a mulligan and we do it all over. So, last week we talked about the movie Trading Places, and we said that the movie really shouldn't ever be remade. Let's try that one again.
So the question is, could you remake Trading Places, and should you?
And the answer is, yeah, you know what? Of course we could. In fact, this is the perfect environment for it, all right? And take out all of that systemic racism that they didn't even realize they had in what they thought was a socially conscious film, all right, and make this a real commentary on privilege. And I would love to see them trade places and you have the same sorts of humor, the same sorts of events take place that, you know, suddenly all these advantages are taken away from the white guy and he's suffering and the black guy is now given this job and position and all this money and yet, here's the thing, is while we get the same sort of movie, we can have some meta-commentary in there where, you know what, even when he's poor, he still gets treated differently than, I mean, there should be some, like, parallel scenes of how the black guy was treated when he was poor versus how the white guy is treated when he's poor and looks like a criminal. And also vice versa, how there's still that creeping racism at the upper levels.
White people can't look like criminals.
See? That's my point. So... I think absolutely this could be remade with the right, and I think it would have to be a black director. I think it would have to be a very diverse,
like,
writing cast.
Jordan Peele?
Well, that's exactly who you're thinking of. Yes, that Jordan Peele was exactly who I had in my head because sadly he's the only black director whose name jumps to mind right away. Is he the only one in Hollywood?
No, I was going to say because he's brilliant, but if you want to pull the race card, I mean...
No, what I'm saying is, my ignorance as a white person, I can't name a whole lot of black directors. I'm just not, anyway, alright, you know what? That's getting off far field and making me really uncomfortable. So let's just skip that and go back to, you know what? Trading Places could be a really cool commentary, on the modern race situation. I think it would be awesome to see it remade, in light of current events and in light of everything we've learned in the last 30 years about race, you know, or better yet, you know, written as if there were actually black people involved with it
and
who could actually speak to the real black experience. Or a real black experience.
You could do as well, instead of just pulling race, you could also make the black person a woman and pull things that way as well.
Yes. You know what? You thought they were mad at Ghostbusters? Make Eddie Murphy a black woman. That would be perfect.
And we're not talking about, like, recasting. No, we're going to genetically modify Eddie Murphy.
I think the best way to handle it would be Eddie Murphy in drag. I am sure that would be the most sensitive way.
Medea's Trading Places.
Okay, so... No, but kidding aside, you know what we mean. That's what I should have said last week. Darn it! Okay, now it's time for everyone's new favorite segment. Jeez, Netflix has a lot of crappy horror movies.
And boy, do they ever.
Okay, this is where I turn it over to my son, who watches a lot of crappy Netflix horror movies, and Holy cow, I can't believe we can have this segment as often as we do. What do you got, man?
Well, first on the list, we have Ritual. Ritual is about four English men who go hiking out in the Swedish mountains.
Okay.
And...
because everyone knows the Swedish are terrible.
They find a...
Hi, Zimny.
They
Sorry.
they find a house that is surrounded by Nordic runes.
Okay.
And stuff starts going down, and push comes shove. They're getting murdered by something that looks identical to the trees.
Okay, so it's The Happening. I don't know, all I know from The Happening is, it's the trees! I have no idea. I know Marky
Mark... Oh, right, where the trees come
from. Right, the Shyamalan film. All I know is Marky Mark is in it, and it was the trees. That's all I know.
The best scene from The Happening is, as they're walking out of a house, a dude bumps a potted plant and feels obligated to apologize to the plant.
Nice. Okay, now, technically, Nordic isn't that... Nordic, is that specifically Norwegian? And thus, can you have Nordic runes in Sweden?
You could have...
Or was Nordic culture spread out across all of...
Based on the plot of the movie, this could have taken place anywhere and still worked.
Okay. All right, that's fine. I didn't know how much Scandinavia mm-hmm. and the individual nations, and I am not as familiar with Scandinavian history as I really ought to be. Although I do read Scandinavia and the World, which is a really cute little comic that everybody should read.
So absolutely.
Anyway, go ahead.
Next on the list is Abattoir. Abattoir is about a...
Wait. Back up to the Ritual. Hold on. So how much did you like it?
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Okay.
It had me on the edge of my seat most of the movie, as a horror movie should.
Okay, because that's ultimately, I mean, I like your descriptions, and sometimes, you know, that can make the difference if I'm on the fence, but more than anything, I like to know, recommend or not recommend.
Yep.
So,
everything on the list today is, I would recommend it.
Oh,
for
cool.
one reason or another.
Okay.
Abattoir is about a reporter who, she gets home, and her entire, her sister and her family have been murdered.
Yes.
All in the same room.
Slaughtered, butchered terribly?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Like, as if they had been thrown into an abattoir.
And one of her best friends is an investigator. So they go to the house a week later, and the room it happened in is missing.
Oh, okay. That's pretty cool.
And so, spoilers from this point on.
Hold on. Spoilers. Okay. Go.
Did you have to remember that?
I'm just giving them a little more head.
Oh, okay.
Headway to get out if they need to. So go ahead.
But turns out that it's a man collecting rooms where tragedies happened to open up a portal to hell.
Okay, I'm in.
Like you know that Westminster movie that's coming out?
Yes.
Imagine that.
Winchester, you mean?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Okay.
But imagine, it's like that. It's just a house made of random-ass rooms.
Nice. Except every room comes with a horrible, horrible history.
That is on repeat until the end of time.
That's beautiful. Okay, that one has to be a high recommend.
Yep.
Alright, go ahead.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed Abattoir. The twists and turns were absolutely brilliant.
Okay. I'm down.
Monster is not your traditional horror movie.
No, it was Charlize Theron. She was the Eileen Warros, female serial killer, and her lesbian lover traveling across the country. That was Monster, right? Okay, there was actually a movie starring Charlize Theron called Monster, where she portrayed real life serial killer Eileen Warros. Which, obviously, I knew that this was a crappy Netflix horror movie, and I knew that this was not the movie. But, okay, stop staring at me. Charlize Theron, she was the one-armed badass from Fury Road. She was Furiosa.
Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
Anyway, Monster. It takes place in a world...
In a world.
Stop that. Where... We don't know where they came from, but these giant land squid monsters, we're talking like 70 stories tall are just roaming the Earth now.
You sure they weren't 30 stories high?
Stop it.
Oh, come on. I want to sing the song.
And it's more about... It's more about the human race being smaller than it thinks it is, rather than being a horror movie within itself. But there are points when I was, like, gripping the chair I was sitting in, like, oh no, what's gonna happen?
Yeah, and he does not get scared easy.
No.
Well, or not necessarily scared, but that tension on the edge of your seat thing, yeah, that's, he's very, very unfazed by most things.
But it's about, like, the wonder of nature and that humans aren't nearly as powerful as they think they are.
Very cool. Okay.
All right, and if you don't know already, this segment goes in from best to worst.
And that's what's so disappointing for me about this, because I can see what's next, and I can't believe that this is going to be the worst.
It's a movie known as Spiders 3D.
Spiders 3D! What 3D horror movie has ever gone wrong? I don't see how they could screw this up.
You know,
Jaws 3D.
You know that Kevin James
Friday the 13th 3D.
You know that Kevin James movie where it's
Pixels?
No, Big Ass Spider.
Oh yeah, I love Big Ass Spider.
Imagine that, but there's more than one
in 3D.
So basically, the plot is that scientists.
Oh my god, tell me there's more than one Kevin James.
Scientists find a ship buried under the Arctic.
Okay.
And they dig up the ship. And what is inside is too horrific for description.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of shutting it up and forgetting about it, no, they took some of its DNA and injected it in the spiders, because that's smart. And then they launched them into space.
Foolproof.
Well, they wanted a... I mean, they tried different animals first. They talked about sharks and bears and...
Right, because why wouldn't you? All right, so...
Whoa, I'm not done.
Okay.
The reason they wanted the spiders was to produce this amazingly powerful silk that would be the strongest material on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Right, because when you've got Eldritch Horror silk...
Right!
What... Nothing beats that.
Right. And so, these spiders reproduce by biting you and injecting you with hundreds of eggs. So there's literally millions of these things. Oh yeah, and a queen.
That's how spider colonies work.
Right, exactly.
Oh, okay, but it's still a recommend.
I would recommend it for it being a really, really fun but dumb watch.
Okay, cheese fest.
Yeah, absolute cheese fest.
Very nice. All right, Oh, man, I have got a lot of segments. I thought this was like a sparse... All right, you know what? Since we just did movie watching, I'm going to skip ahead and do a little Roku. Roku is the streaming box that we used to watch all of our streaming television on. We don't now because we just do it on the
Blu-ray. Which makes this segment's title a misnomer.
Right, but... Pat and Sarah Beth decided it was time to cut the cable, and they didn't have a smart TV, and so instead of going out and buying a brand new smart TV, they bought Roku!
I mean, technically all the Roku box is just a box that turns your TV into a smart TV.
Right, it is the smart TV adapter. Yes, that's exactly correct. And when they got there to buy it, did you ask the sales guy? For a Roku! No.
And did he look at you real weird?
She didn't, but she told me she almost did. So, anyway, this is all about TV watching. Since I don't have cable anymore, this is how I watch all my television, is online. So, alright, real quick to get through them. New season of Angie Tribeca is out, season 3. If you're not watching Angie Tribeca, and you appreciate the humor of the movie Airplane, or the old TV show Police Squad, which then became the Naked Gun movies. If you like that style of humor, then watch Angie Tribeca. It's really, really good. It's really well written. It's from Steve Carell and his wife Nancy Walls. Nancy Walls Carell, maybe. And it stars Rashida Jones, who was in Parks and Rec. And it's just really funny. So... Watch that one. New season of Archer is out.
You mean the Bob's Burgers ripoff?
Yeah, that's right. They never mind.
This one is.
Well, you and Jacob have a problem watching Archer because you can't handle seeing Bob's Burgers' voice come out of this secret agent guy. Whereas whenever I watch Bob's Burgers, it's really uncanny for me because I don't know why Bob has to sound so much like Archer. It's creepy.
I mean, so, have you heard the voice actor in interviews?
Yeah.
He's not even putting on a
no,
voice.
No, that's the thing. He is a prolific voice actor and, John Benjamin. And he is a prolific voice actor. He's been doing voiceover work forever, and that's the only voice he has. He doesn't do voices. He just does himself. He's just a voiceover actor.
So it's weird whenever I'm watching an interview of him, and it's just Bob's Burgers' voice just coming
right,
out of a
it's
real
just Bob.
Person.
So, anyway, for what it's worth, Archer Season 8, Dreamland, is not that great.
They named their seasons?
No, they named this season. Specifically, Archer was killed at the end of last season.
Cool.
But it
Thank
turns
God.
Out, spoiler warning, it turns out he's not actually dead. He's in a coma, which you knew he wasn't going to die because they have to have another season. But this entire season is a dream inside Archer's head while he's in a coma, we think. Which means it's really funny, but, you know, I spent 7 seasons, even though I know it's a stupid, stupid comedy, but I still spent 7 seasons getting invested in these characters, and now these characters are not the same anymore. I mean, it's still, they still act like themselves, but they don't have the same relationships and connections and the same motivations, and so therefore, it's not the same. It's not, it doesn't, I mean, I'm enjoying watching it, but I'm not in any hurry to get around to it. So, I mean, this one you could almost skip if you were on the fence. Yeah, who cares?
Wait. Would you recommend it, though? Because I listened to the segment to listen to your recommendations.
All right. if you have watched seasons 1 through 7 of Archer and enjoyed them, then yes, you should go ahead and watch it anyway, but just be prepared that it's different. Next one is Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams. I told you I was going to try that one out. Yes, I said Dick.
Philip.
So, I only saw episode 1, but it was really good. Extremely well done. I am really looking forward to watching the rest of this season because it was a good episode. So, you know, from 1 episode I can recommend, but that's about it. But before we turn around, there's one more entry in the Roku segment, and that is Petscop. I know.
May I take over on this one?
Yes, that's what it's here for.
All right, so give me a second to pull up some information.
Petscop, P-E-T-S, Pets, C-O-P, Cop, Petscop. And I don't know if it's supposed to be Petscop or...
It's Pet Shop, but misspelled.
Pet Scop. Oh, is it just Pet Shop? Okay.
Yeah. It's my theory on why it's called Pet Scop is that it's Pet Shop and Pet Scape after all the different worlds you enter are called.
Oh, Pet Scape. Pet Scop. All right, I got it. Anyway, yeah, Pet Scop. Pet Scop is a YouTube series.
Give me a second.
Well,
No.
Well, I was going to say, it's a YouTube series that is 13 episodes in. So, and each episode is anywhere from,
Whoa.
You know... Some, oh, 2 minutes
okay, yeah.
to 9 minutes to 20
March
something
12th,
minutes.
March 12th, 2017, the YouTube channel Petscop was created.
Uh-huh.
And for about a month, it only had one video entitled Petscop. And it's about a video game, quote-quote, that this guy, quote-quote, found, quote-quote, and is now playing, quote-quote.
You don't have to keep saying, quote, you can just do the fingers and they'll know.
Will they?
Yeah. Yeah, they can feel it. It vibrates their headphones. It's okay. So.
But, as this playthrough goes on, you realize that something is very seriously wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, look, episode 1 is...
fairly normal.
Yeah, it's him playing, yeah. Okay, now that you say it's supposed to be Pet Shop, I get that. Okay. But it is an old video game on what, an original PlayStation?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was made in 1997 by the gaming company Garolina, which doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. And so this 20-year-old video game brings you into a pet shop, and there's really crappy graphics, and there are pets in the various rooms, and the object is to try and capture them, and you have to solve puzzles to do it, and some of the puzzles are really super easy and some of them are super stupid, but it doesn't matter. There's one that you can't capture at all, and then you can see sections where it looks like there should be more here, but there's nothing. It's, like, broken.
Right. And he said that when he found this game, there was a note with it, with a cheat code on it, that if you go to a certain room and type in this certain code, things happen.
Right.
So he did it, and nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
As he left, the once bright and colorful world he entered in on is now a grassy scape shrouded in darkness and nothing else for miles.
Right, and so this is him discovering the rest of this bizarre game from 20 years ago. And
from 20 years ago.
Right, and so as you watch it, it is really well made. It looks authentically ancient. It has a lot of the tropes of games of that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it feels very real. And I believe that this is a, like the mystery podcasts that I have listened to, where we're trying to solve a mystery. That's what he's doing, except he's doing it through video game format.
Sort of. I think that it's more like if you know what a creepypasta is.
I only know the word creepypasta.
It's a scary story invented by the internet.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It is supposed to be, it's clearly working itself up to try and convince you that
this is real.
That there is, well, yes, that it's very Blair Witch Project real, but trying to convince you that, you know what, I'm going to edit out some of that because maybe I've revealed too much.
Right.
I'll go back and re-listen.
All you need to know is watch episodes 1 through 13 and then watch all three game theories on it.
Look, all you need to know is just watch episodes 1 through 3. They're really quick.
Yeah.
Watch episodes 1 through 3, and if you're like us, you're hooked. You're going to watch the
rest of
them.
If you want to dig deeper through this rabbit hole.
If you enjoy weird, possibly supernatural, but possibly just bizarre mysteries, then you'll probably enjoy this. And like I say, it's just told in a really novel format, and I really like it. So, Petscop. Check it out on YouTube. All right. That's the end of that one.
On to the science fiction double feature.
Science fiction double feature.
That's right. Here at Nerd Pride Radio, you get not one, but two movie reviews for the same low, low price.
I only see one.
Okay, first off. Oh. 83. Why, it's from Produce Farmer.
What's happening?
Produce Farmer says, what was your favorite aspect of Luc Besson's most recent movie, Valerian? Did you watch it in 3D? Okay, that question came up twice already, and I keep putting it back in the list because I had not watched Valerian at the time. But guess what? I watched Valerian now, and no, I did not watch it in 3D because I watched it on Amazon. So I saw it here at home. But I am going to tell you that this movie pissed me off to no end.
Okay, is it because it wasn't like the book?
I've never read... Oh, no. I have read one of the original Valerian comics, not the City of a Thousand Planets, but I've read other Valerian... And the original comics that it's based on are horrible. They're horrible, sexist, very antiquated, outdated pieces of garbage, which thus, it shouldn't surprise me that given that source material... Luc Besson did not update it to the modern age. It is still kind of creepy and sexist at a lot of parts. It's still very antiquated. And it's just worse than that. It's just poorly written. It is just shallow. It has this thin veneer of looking like a plot, but it's not even really a plot. And it's just dumb. Now, my favorite part of this movie is the world was amazing. I didn't have to see it in 3D, and I didn't even have to see it on the big screen. And I still was mesmerized by this world. I wish that that had been enough for me. I wish that this amazing realm could have been enough to sustain me. But it just sadly
God,
wasn't.
God, what are you, Galactus?
Oh,
this world does not sustain me.
Yes. That is exactly what I am. And I am not pleased. So, I am telling you, this world had so much potential. It was gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. Beautifully rendered with all sorts of badass concepts, weird dimension hopping, they had another dimension entered in, and I don't even know why that dimension exists, or was it just we are teleporting not to another dimension, but it's just another world? I don't understand where we are, but didn't matter, because it was still mind-blowing and overwhelming and so much fun to watch them play with the physics of these places and do all this really cool stuff. And then it still turns out that despite all the cool things, it was just shallow. It was shallow and flat and pointless. And you know what? Maybe I'm asking too much, but you can't give me an alien race that has never been touched by humanity. We've never visited them. And yet they are so human-like in appearance. No, they aliened them up. They gave them bigger eyes and made them a little more childlike, and they had some aquatic features to them, and they had this and that. This is the ones that the movie opens on. And yet, their movements, their facial expressions, their reactions, it was so human, so amazingly human. I'm like, I'm kind of a curmudgeon about this now. I don't get it, because I'm okay with Star Wars. I'm okay with Star Wars and the fact that all the major races seem to have two arms, two legs, a head with forward-facing eyes, usually. I seem to be okay with all of that.
Have you seen salamanders and how none of them are related?
I don't know what you're talking about.
There are very, very many species of salamander that aren't related.
No, but they all evolved on the same planet. And genetically, they've got the same basis and the same... And so, in Star Wars...
I'm just
Wars,
saying, it's not totally impossible.
Star Wars, somehow, I'm okay with the idea that we've got all this parallel evolution. Star Trek even tried to explain it away with a progenitor species that went around seeding planets, and that's why somehow Vulcans and humans can interbreed, Klingons and humans can interbreed. It's just... okay... I guess. And somehow I forgive those, and yet I see it in a new thing like Valerian, and I'm like, yeah, evolution doesn't work that way. You can't, like the Na'vi from Avatar, evolution doesn't work that way. They're not going to look that human. They're not going to be, it's not just a human painted blue. It's, you've got to give me a real alien. You've got to give me some creativity. I'm being overly picky. There was so much about this movie to hate without going to my problems with parallel evolution on distant planets. That's really the least of my worries. So, overall, I hated this movie. Hated it, wouldn't watch it again, don't recommend it, and yet, there was so much there that could have been. But even the acting was terrible. I didn't care for either of these two. Ugh, Cara Delevingne, who I normally don't mind, but she was just, she had no passion in this one. No fire, no anything. It was terrible. Terrible. Okay. But the other movie I saw, Every Day. All right. This is a movie. It's one of those teenage sci-fi romance movies, which apparently is a genre now. And in Every Day, we have a person who, for their entire lives, wakes up every day in the body of a new person. And it's always someone about their own age, so their age progresses normally through the movie, which is really important because it makes the romance less creepy. And what happens when this person who wakes up in a new body every day, don't know who it's going to be, don't know... male, female, whatever. All you know is it's going to be someone about the right age. And someone relatively close to the last one. So it stays in the same geographic area. What happens when that person falls in love? What happens when they meet the one and they fall in love? Well, that's what this movie is about.
You memorize their phone number.
Yeah.
done, movie over.
No, because then...
You just send them a text every day. It's like, hey, this is
okay.
My new number.
All right, yeah, no, you got that. Great. You figured out... Look, let me just tell you right now, this movie is not worth watching. Don't go see it. So I'm going to spoil it here.
Spoilers!
And if you don't like that idea, then, you know, skip ahead. But really, here's the problem. It is a really novel idea, and it's really cool to think about, but when they put it into practice, it becomes super creepy.
So sort of like communism.
It is.
It looks good on paper, but in practice it doesn't quite work.
It is, yeah. It's just, there are really...
Well, there you have it. Just end it there. The movie's like communism.
It tastes like Aqua Velva, really. So, it is... The movie tries to get around some of these consent issues and some of the problematic stuff, and it tries to explain things, but it's just not... It just doesn't get there. It is really... Oh. I said I was going to spoil it. How much do you want me to spoil it?
If you're recommending that no one see it ever, then you can spoil whatever you want.
Look, because the girl who is the protagonist of this movie, she falls in love with this person that we refer to as A, and they fall deeply in love, and eventually A convinces her that, yeah, this is really who she is, and this is really what happens to them every day. And
you just say they.
And... well, no, because some days it's a he and some days
right,
it's a she.
Right, but the entity within these bodies you could have referred to as
I know. I can, but I was actually saying it that way to emphasize that sometimes it is decidedly one or the other, and sometimes it's not, by the way. Sometimes you jump into someone who doesn't have a definite pronoun like that. And the problem is that the movie never explicitly says that they have sex, and if you want to read into it to say that they did, then you could read that into this movie. But if you also want to read into it that they didn't, you can read that in too. It leaves it open to your interpretation. And either way, though, they're hijacking someone else's body every day and putting them through these paces to go be with the person that they love, and even if it's just making out, even if it's just, I mean, that's still this, that's you, you're using someone else's body for things
that
are,
I would do
it's
in that
creepy.
Situation?
What?
I would, like, at the end of every day, before I go to sleep, I'd go fall asleep on the same park bench every day.
Well,
so that random people just wake up on this park bench.
Here's the thing. A keeps track of their life through an Instagram account. So whoever's body they wake up in that day, they log into their Instagram account, and then at the end of the day, they have alarms set. So at the end of the day, before they transition to somewhere else, they erase all of it from that person's phone or device or whatever, so that person has no idea what's been going on. And it's just, I don't know. The thing, it was unsatisfying. You get to the end and it was just, I get what they were trying to do, and it was a really interesting thought experiment, and it would have made an interesting short story, or an interesting movie featuring adults where you could actually delve into some of the more problematic themes of this movie, and actually explore them rather than kind of glossing over them as if this is okay. And in the end, you know, they make a choice to not exploit people and yet, also make a choice to get more involved in their lives, to try and do more to help people when you're in their body. It was weird.
How would you know what to do? You're only in their body for a day.
Saved a girl from committing suicide. That counts, right?
But that doesn't pertain to their life. They're also not going to remember it when they wake up, so you're not bettering them as a person in any way.
No. Did ensured that she got help so that she made arrangements during the day that she was in that body.
Oh.
Made arrangements so that the next day...
Save the body they were in from suicide.
Right.
I thought just one of the bodies is like, no, don't do it.
No. It was very, very clearly that the person that she jumped into was going to commit suicide sometime very soon.
Therefore,
well, on this particular day, it was a she. Okay. Because it was in a female body that identified as she. And so... made the choice to arrange for that person to get help the next day. that someone would intervene. And anyway, again, you know, I wanted it to be so much more, but again, it's a movie for teens, so it had to be simplified, and this wasn't a set of themes that were, really easily or well simplified, is I guess what I'm saying. So, darn it. So yeah, 2-0 for 2, on this week's, double feature. So, sad. Anyway.
Sad.
Uh-oh. Get the little ones out of the room. Make sure you're sitting down for this.
Nerd rage came flashing back, and I just looked at him and went, Rrr!
That's right, it's time for some nerd rage. Okay, this week's nerd rage is aimed directly at the Walmart employee who is working the self-checkout area. Okay, you got a big self-checkout area, and you have one employee that monitors the whole thing, helps people out, does manager overrides, this kind of stuff. You know what? Person that works the Walmart self-checkout, you have one job. One. And you keep screwing it up. Alright? Your one job is to refill the plastic bags and make sure they face the right way so that they're easy to peel off. That's all you have to do. Yeah, I know. You've got this other stuff that they're paying you to do that supposedly, you know, keep the area clean and, yeah, assist people as needed and this kind of garbage. Yeah, but I don't need you for any of that. Okay? What I need is bags that work. I cannot... Oh, it is so frustrating. When you get up there, the Walmart bags, they hang on that little metal rack. All right, the little sides go over the arms there. And then in the center is the little tabby part, and you just pull that out, and you've got an open bag. And here's the thing. Like tissues, you drop everything in here, and when you pull the bag off, it's like a tissue come out of the box. You pull it off, and then the next bag pops open automatically. It just pulls the next one into position so it's ready for use immediately. You shouldn't even have to think about your bags at Walmart. You just drop stuff in, pull that bag off to put back in your cart, boom, you got another bag ready to go. You just keep moving. That's all. That's all there is. And yet, somehow, I keep getting messages. I told you I was going to turn this phone off last week when this was happening, and I forgot. So let's turn this sucker down. There we go. But somehow, I keep getting Walmart self-checkout employees who keep putting the bags on backwards. All right, they hang them on backwards, and so now when you pull that bag off, the next one doesn't come with it. And now you have to sit there and fiddle with it, and it's like super, super thin, so it's really tough to peel off just that one little edge so you can get the bag actually open, and it takes me forever. And every single bag, when they're turned around backwards, every bag takes me like a good 30 seconds to a minute to get the next one open. Now, I've watched Walmart employees, when they're helping someone with this, will come over and lick their fingers and then flick that next bag open. And sure enough, if you've licked your fingers, that bag opens right up. I refuse to do that. I don't want your spit on that bag any more than the next person who comes along wants my spit on those bags. So don't lick your damn fingers and touch the bags. No, you know what you do? You put the whole rack of bags on there the right way. And it's really easy to tell because the Walmart logo will be facing out. That's how you know. If you can't see the Walmart logo, or if you can only see it backwards, then you did it wrong. Oh. So, if any of you listening happen to work at Walmart, and you happen to occasionally be responsible for the self-checkout line, for God's sake, just put the bags on the right way.
You know,
is that so tough?
You keep using, like, general pronouns, but I feel like this segment's directed at someone.
Okay, look.
Someone you might know.
Okay, Sam?
Okay,
Sam?
You're gonna be so blunt about it.
If you're listening...
Fuck you.
No. Sam, if you're listening, I will tell you, I don't think this has ever happened to me while you have been working the self-checkout, because I know that if it did... If the bags were on backwards and someone I knew personally was working there, I would have pointed it out. I would have grabbed you and said, dude, what the hell? How do I fix this? All right? Because I don't know how to turn the things around. I can't, like, lift them off of that rack, and I'm afraid I'm just going to mess up the whole pile, and it'll be terrible. So,
is it a pile if it's sideways?
So, well, it is once I'm done with it and I've dropped it on the floor.
Let's not talk about
balls. So, my point, Sam, is I don't think it's you, but you are in a position of power where, and by power I mean like you're there and you talk to these people, where can you set the other employees straight? Can you talk to the ones who screw this thing up, the lazy ones who aren't nearly as conscientious as you are, and get them to fix this? I don't care about any other Walmart in the country, just mine. My Walmart that I go to on a regular basis, if you can get them to fix it there, you know, bring it up at the next staff meeting. Make a fuss about it. Tell your manager that some customer complained.
You're assuming that Walmart cares enough to have employee meetings.
All right, Sam, I'm sorry. I know there's nothing you can do about it, but I can dream, right?
I can dream, Harold.
Oh, man. That's my nerd rage. Okay. Hey, that's it. We're all done. Guess what?
Is it time for the Ron-O-Matic?
No, it's just going to be a regular Pod-O-Matic. You want to do that one?
I mean, is Ron not one-third of it?
Well, he is, but I don't want to give people, new listeners, the wrong idea. Yes, Ron has a lot of Pod-O-Matics.
But that's just a challenge for you guys to send in more, right?
Well, they're going to have to send in a lot more because I'm adjusting the flow of Ron.
It's like one per person.
Right. I'm adjusting the flow of Ron Pod-O-Matics.
And heck,
to keep them at a steady level.
If we delegate this to everyone on the planet who could be possibly listening to the podcast, well then, you only need to submit like one millionth of a question.
True. Okay. But if we actually get it to, well, alright, you know what? I'm not gonna do math.
Can we pause for a second?
Sure. Okay, just to explain, Eli is playing something behind us, and so
tethered a goat to the back of a Jeep.
So Hayden has said, "Can we pause for a minute?" And then as soon as we pause, he's like, "Eli, what the hell are you doing?" And we turn around, and sure enough, Eli is powering a Jeep down a dirt road with a goat tied to the back of his Jeep, just dragging along behind him, and he's like... He's like, I must set the goat free. And then he goes off of a cliff,
releases the tether, and they both just slam into a cliff face.
Terrible. Okay. But that's not the point. The point was I was hoping that without me having to do it myself, you would explain that it's time for the
Pod-O-Matic.
O-matic. Anticlimactic. Hot dog, this is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you guys come in. You want to hear us haver on about something? You send your question or topic to us by email, or better yet, in a private message on our forums. I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list, because Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. Awesome. And our first number is 23, my favorite number.
Mine as well.
This is going to be a spectacular Pod-O-Matic.
Is it Ronster?
Probably. Yes, it is.
Ronster.
I told you it'd be awesome. And Ron says, what is your Hogwarts house? My Hogwarts house is Ravenclaw, but I'd really like it to be Hufflepuff. I wish it was Hufflepuff. I hope I have enough aptitude that when I put on the sorting hat and it says, ooh, Ravenclaw, and I could go, please Hufflepuff, and it'd say, well, if that's what you want, like it did to Harry, except, you know, for Gryffindor.
Well, actually.
He's a jock loser.
Technically, you couldn't get into Hogwarts.
I got the letter when I was 10. My parents wouldn't let me go.
Because Hogwarts is UK regional.
Oh, just stop. Okay.
No, hold on. Hear me out.
Okay, I understand. Oh my god, wait, there's a Puckwudgie house? There's a Puck... I want to be Puckwudgie. I'm settled. Done.
I'm sorry.
Which one, who's the Puckwudgies? What does it say? What's the description?
Give me a second.
Now!
Okay,
Who are the Puckwudgies? Read
The houses. Thunderbird, Puckwudgie, Wampus, and Horned Serpent.
Okay, Horned Serpent is obviously the Slytherin. And Thunderbird is,
Puckwudgie is a Gryffindor. Short gray animal with a comically large ears that is native to America. It's best known for being fiercely independent, mischievous, and not overly friendly to non-magical creatures.
Ooh.
The beast, which is a distant relative of the European goblin, which some might remember, ran Gringotts in Diagon Alley.
Yeah.
Used poisonous arrows to hunt. The Puckwudgie House was named by James Stewart, one of the last founding members to join the pack, and was only crowned the official symbol of the house because the steward realized that the rest of the founders were using magical creatures, and he thought the Puckwudgie was hilarious.
Okay, wait. So, What are the attributes of
those
house?
Who are sorted into Pukwudgie have the same traits as the creatures that represent their house. They are wickedly smart and independent. The closest analog to Hogwarts would probably be Ravenclaw.
Oh, yeah, of course it would be. All right, no, I'll go with Pukwudgie just for the name. So who's that? The Wumpus? Is that going to be our Hufflepuff?
Similarly sorted to Gryffindor.
Oh, really? Gryffindor or Ravenclaw. So,
and Thunderbird.
So the United States doesn't have any cuddly love houses. So,
and then there's also the Horned Serpent,
which is clearly a Slytherin.
Yeah,
clearly a Slytherin. It's got Voldemort's name in there.
No, it's Hufflepuff. No, it's Slytherin. Of course it is.
Of course it's Slytherin. All right. Anyway, but there was more to this question. Oh, wait, what's your Hogwarts house?
I can't. I'm, again, American. I'd be Horned Serpent.
Oh, you'd be Slytherin if you were in...
Well, I mean, if I was Hogwarts? British, yes.
God, you pedantic ass. All right. If you don't know, then go to Pottermore.com and get sorted into a Hogwarts house and tell us. Oh, okay. No. That's the answer, is that Ravenclaw or Pukwudgie. But, man, I would love to be a Hufflepuff. I love Hufflepuff. It is a house that is all about love and support and friendship. I can't beat that. So
yeah,
76. Oh, 76. You're right.
Your old eyes can't read no more.
76.
Gotta wear your old man bifocals.
You know what was special about 1976?
What?
When I was 6 years old.
What?
It was the bicentennial of the United States of America. It was the 200th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. It was a huge deal. A massive deal. All right. Oh, number 76. This one's from my wife, Lisa, which scares me. It says, oh, well, maybe this one's not so bad. It says, I know you want to be cremated, but let's say you are buried after you die. And I know you think it's wasteful to be buried with possessions, but let's say someone insisted... and is burying you with meaningful items. What would you want to be buried with?
His,
My wife. No.
Wow!
I know, that's terrible, isn't it? Well, she's the one asking the question.
I was gonna say your version 1 D&D manual, but...
Oh, no, I don't have that. Bury me with whatever smartphone I happen to have at that time.
Bury me with my money.
And, obviously... my spinner ring, my Die 20 spinner ring. That would be super cool. And, I can't think of anything else that would be super important for, no, R2. Bury me with R2. I will take R2 with me. That would be awesome. Alright. What about you?
And you happen to roll the next number, so we can't talk about it anymore.
Alright, 31. 31 is from?
That's a good question, though.
I know, but too late.
All of my magic cards. There you go.
Ooh, that's a good one. This one is from Ronster. And Ron
American
says,
Beauty style, like, sprinkled over my body.
You must place you in the coffin naked.
Yeah.
Pose you with your legs just almost crossed, the cards strategically placed.
Yeah.
Maybe your fingers over your nipples, something.
Yeah.
Very sexy. Okay. Gotcha. hold on, I'm writing this down because we don't want to forget this. 31 is from Ronster, who says, if you had to live on an island similar to the one in which Luke hid himself in Star Wars Episode 8, in which body of water would you prefer to be located?
One drinkable, so I don't have to milk whatever those things on the cliff were.
That's pretty good. That's so, a huge lake somewhere?
Yeah, put me in the middle of a great lake.
Well, the Great Lakes are kind of gross now, but.
They're
but still,
the not so great lakes?
A big lake, a big freshwater something or other. Yeah, that's actually a really good idea. I was going to say, put me off the coast of the British Isles. I don't care. If I've got to live in a place like that, somewhere warmer. Maybe a little more southern. You know, put me off the coast of Spain or something. Close to New Zealand. I don't care. It doesn't matter. As long as it is, not quite tropical, but close to tropical. That would be the perfect latitude for me. 08, plus I can't beat his freshwater versus milk comment. So really.
It was blue.
Eight. Well, it was a reference back to blue milk from a much earlier. I don't remember if it was in episode 4 or if it was. Anyway, it was a way of justifying the drink that we had seen in an earlier Star Wars, which I had never paid any attention to, but I heard people commenting on
it. Anyway, it's from Kaz.
Kaz says, tapioca or rice pudding? Which one is more of an affront to the human palate?
An affront. Tapioca.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you ever had rice pudding?
Yes.
Yeah.
The texture of tapioca is what makes it gross.
I love tapioca. I am fine with tapioca.
I don't like balls in my pudding.
I don't mind rice pudding either, but tapioca is fine. Yeah, it did, yeah, the tapioca nuggets or whatever they are. What is the pearls? That's the tapioca pearls are a little weird, but I'm cool with them. I'm fine. So, yeah, it doesn't bother me. 21. What the? Okay, you gotta stop that. You gotta stop. He's showing me weird stuff on his phone because he's a millennial and he can't quite concentrate. So, are you a millennial?
Yeah.
We decided that? Okay.
Yeah.
You gotta stop wiping your 21. On my blanket.
It's my younger kids that are post-millennial. So whatever generation that is, Generation Z, we have no idea.
No, it's Generation Super.
Nice.
Because of Dragon Ball Z.
Ooh. All right. This one is from Blue Devil, Andrew. And Andrew says, what's your most overrated technological advancement of the last 25 years? So, since 1993...
Overrated technological advancement?
Yeah, the technological advancement that is most overrated, most hyped, and yet doesn't really...
The electrical eraser.
All right, that's a good one. I was going to say virtual reality. Virtual reality has still not lived up to its promise. I think the newest round of VR goggles, I love them, but they're still not...
Have you done any of the PlayStation VR?
No. I know it's good.
With the Vive and...
I know that they've got really good stuff, but it's still not yet to the point where people are willing... It's you have some people doing it, but it's not catching on with the masses because people are still not willing to wear stupid crap on their head for that long. It's difficult. So people just don't like wearing stupid crap on their head. I mean, I'll put up with it for a while because the VR is really, really cool. But it's just not quite there yet for me. I still think it's overhyped. Although, I mean, I think it kind of peaked at Virtual Boy. So, you know. The virtual...
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I'm just disappointed.
I'm sorry.
69. Sweet.
69, dude. And 69... comes from Ronster. All right, wait to round this out, Ron. Ron says, you have founded MikeCon, and it is a blazing success.
As if.
What does your con feature, and what does it exclude? Okay. First off, it's going to be Nerd Pride Con, but whatever. That's fine. And second of all...
No. It has to be Nerd Pride and then something like con, but... with an R, so that no matter what acronym you use, it's still NPR.
So Nerd Pride Ron?
No.
Well, he's taking over everything. So, anyway, it is going to feature absolutely for sure role-playing games, board games, card games.
If it fits on Mike's gaming table, it'll be at MikeCon.
It will be tabletop games of all sorts.
Gen Con ripoff.
Yeah, absolutely it'll be a Gen Con ripoff. And then as time goes on, as it gets bigger and more out of hand, if we want to introduce video games, if we want to introduce things like the miniatures painting and there's all sorts of side stuff, there's all sorts of shows, there's lots of things and crafts and whatnot that are related to gaming but aren't directly games themselves. You can work in all of that stuff. I don't care. But yeah, Gen Con ripoff, basically. What does it exclude?
Furries.
I can't exclude anything. Not furries are all right. Nothing wrong with furries.
I mean, have you ever tried playing a tabletop board or card game in a fursuit?
Well, it's not for me, but that's okay.
No. It makes it very difficult, so for everyone to enjoy themselves properly, I'm going to have to ban fursuits.
You can't, A, because there's got to be costumes. There's got to be costumes. And what's the difference between dressing up as a Pokemon and dressing up in a fursuit? I mean, what's the difference between...
But that's what they identify as.
I don't care.
It's not them in a costume. So you're saying that someone who dresses up as the other gender is only in a costume. They're not really like that.
So what?
Gosh, you are so close-minded.
So what you're telling me is that if someone shows up in a fursuit, I have to ask them if it's just a costume or if they truly identify with the outfit that they're wearing. And if they identify with it, then I have to exclude them because they're furries. But if it's just a costume for the costume contest, then it's okay.
No, if they walk in a fursuit, you kick them out immediately without asking questions.
All right. I will just exclude Aiden.
Uh-huh.
I know. Sorry, that's just how it goes. So, anyway, we are all done. No, we are all done. Stop it. We have to get on to listener betrayal. So, I'm going to turn it over to GLaDOS, and she will recap this week's episode so far.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
"No way."
And then I was all, "We pretended we were going to murder you."
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2018 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was Weezer's in the Garage, Science Fiction Double Feature by Me First and the Gimme Gimmies, and a song to be named later. That we'll include next week. All right, there you go. All the songs I use are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't put them on my podcast if I didn't love them. Don't forget, so when you suggest songs to be played for the Trap and Wit segment, it has to be, a song that is appropriate for the Trap and Wit segment, and also it has to be one I love so that this statement can remain true about how much I love all these songs. All right, anyway.
Stop.
If you want to help out Nerd Pride, subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or whatever podcatcher you use, and then write us a nice review, or write us a crappy review as long as you give us 5 stars, because that's what makes the difference. If you want to do something super nice for the podcast, recommend it to your friends. You're enjoying it. We know you are. We can see you. All right, so spread the word and let other people enjoy it as well. Word of mouth. It's my bread and butter, people. And, I had to stumble there because, when I say we can see you, I don't want you to get creeped out. It just means that we are physically watching you all the time.
Speaking of which...
That's not creepy.
When you work at a place that gets calls in for pizza and stuff...
Yeah?
We have a system that when the phone number comes in, if they've ordered from us before, we have their name and address right there in front of us when they call.
Right.
The best thing to do is when someone calls in and then you read them their own name without them telling you and they ask... How'd you know that? Say, I recognized your voice.
Nice. That's so good. I only called once, like 3 months ago. Yeah, we know, Debbie. All right.
We know.
So, anyway, remember, I'm always looking for you listeners to do my work for me, so don't forget to send me questions and topics for the Podomatic. Watch out every week on the forums and on Facebook for listener betrayal. And... if you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, for example, say you could come up with something interesting about 224 or 225. Well, that one's probably easy. 226, any of those. Why, send them to me. I'll use them. Even if they're terrible, I'll use them because I'm lazy and I don't want to do all
just
that grueling research.
From that grueling, grueling research.
Thank you. My contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But, to be completely honest, the very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. Sign up there, send me a message, we will hang out together, we will become best friends in the world. We'll have fun.
So a friend of mine pointed out that I'm not technically allowed to say we'll have fun with you at the end of the segment because I'm not on the forums.
Yeah, no, that's true. I have noticed.
But I mean, we can
yeah,
still...
we know Debbie. Yeah, that's right. We're watching
we
you.
We can still have fun.
No, 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 we can't have fun until you get in there.
But, I mean, in time.
Tell me this, Bender. Are you funky enough?
Yes.
Are you?
I mean, in time.
Are you?
No.
I didn't think so. Okay. Now it's time for Listener Betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, we go out to Facebook and to my website. Well, I go out to my website. But Aiden goes to his phone and he mails his list of listener friends that he has. And, we ask people, hey, we're recording right now. Comment, ask us questions, do whatever. We'll read it off at the end of the podcast. And sure enough, that is exactly what we're doing right now. So first, I'm going to start on Facebook and we'll start with Sarah Beth. Sarah Beth. Oh, my question, by the way. I said, now recording 223, are you a cat person or a dog person or neither? If you got a new pet of whatever your favorite type is, what would you name it? So Sarah Beth says, I'm so a cat person. I really want a Savannah cat, but Pat says no $16,000 kittens for us.
Oh, come on, Pat.
I know. He is selfish. It's also his birthday. Happy birthday, Pat. So, you know, maybe he should get whatever he wants for his birthday and not a $16,000 kitten. But anyway, she says, silly man, I'd name her Malkia, which is Swahili for queen, or if it were a male, Paka, which just means cat, but is pronounceable for my clumsy tongue. Ha ha. Okay. Very cool. And, is that what this is below? Is a picture of a Savannah? They are tall, gorgeous, love to swim and jump, and are great with kids. A hybrid between a serval and a domestic cat. Yeah, yeah, it's half wild cat.
That's half serval.
Yeah, it makes
have you seen how servals drink?
I have not.
You at home, Google how servals drink. It's interesting.
I've seen videos of Savannah cats, and like I'm looking at this one, and I'm looking at this picture going, yeah, yeah, it's a leopard. That's what it is. It's a jungle cat. But I've seen videos of them, and yes, they look awesome. I would love to meet and hang out with a Savannah cat. I think they look amazing. I'm nervous about, you know, it would be like if you wanted to bring a dog into your house that was half wolf, you'd have that, you know, little concern that maybe a wild animal isn't the best to bring in. But Savannahs are apparently, not that kind of problem. So, you know, maybe I'm just being nervous for nothing, but we'll see. What, you, nothing yet?
Okay. I can't.
All right. And then, Yantha responds and says, I too am most definitely a cat person. I love the larger than life personalities that felines tend to have. If I could, I'd have an ocelot and name her Yersinia Petsis after the Black Plague. Yersinia Petsis. That's pretty good. Okay. Again, what's with the wildcats, you guys? I'm telling you. Russian Blue. Bear is the best cat that ever lived. And the difference between him and Raven, you know, no offense, Raven, but Raven is a short-haired, she's an all-black, short-haired cat. But she comes out, and we pet her, and, you know, it only takes a minute of petting, and you realize you've got a handful of fur that regular cats shed. Bear does not shed. He doesn't lose any of that fur. I don't know where. I mean, obviously, he must lose fur somewhere. I don't know where, but because we never see it. But, oh, he's awesome. He's non-shedding, hypoallergenic, incredibly well-behaved, giant. He's huge. Russian Blues are above average size for house cats. And
it hurts when he stands on you.
And he's just a good cat. I'm making the assumption that all Russian Blues are exactly like Bear, and therefore they would all be equally good pets. So based on that, everyone should have one.
He's very concerned when we cough, though.
Yes, he does come in and check. He worries. And anyway, he's a loving cat, and he's awesome. Although, this is going to make terrible radio, but as a joke the other day, Lisa said something about petting him, and so I went over and I pet him like this. He doesn't like that.
Why would you like basketball
like,
him?
Like, yeah, literally just patting him on the head, not rubbing or stroking his fur or any of that, just literally pat on top of his head, And he tolerates me, but he's clearly not pleased.
He doesn't find you funny.
No, and yet I keep doing it because I find it super funny, and I know it's just pissing him off, but I can't help myself. I'm trying to control myself because there's no reason to go torture a good cat like that. But yeah, he puts up with it. Yeah, kind of the way you put up with my shit. So, you know, it all works out. All right.
Yeah, I guess.
And then it says, done! I'm finished here. You want me to go to my website, or you want to go to your phone?
I got some kind of long ones on the phone, so let's save that last.
We'll save that for last. Let's go over to Nerd Pride Radio, nerdprideradio.com/nerds. And I said, it's on like Donkey Kong. Speaking of which...
But Donkey Kong hasn't been on for years.
Speaking of which, Aiden and I have been hate-playing Ghosts and Goblins from the old NES. Still hate it. You got any bitter memories of really old video games? Oh, yeah, and ask us stuff if you want. All right, so the first one, and I think all of them, first one is Dave. And Dave says, Mega Man 2 was awesome.
Mega Man 2 was fantastic.
Mega Man 1 could die a fiery death. I couldn't beat it for the life of me.
Mega Man 5 was the best, though.
Hugs and kisses, me. All right. And then next he says, you're wishing Dark's a happy birthday, right? Oh, God, thank God I squeezed that one in, huh? Woo! Yes, it's Pat's birthday. Happy birthday, Pat.
How awesome is DM Darks' birthday?
So awesome. Oh, damn it. I missed it. Try again. Trepanwitz.
How awesome is DM Darks' birthday?
You asked it different.
You said often first.
The first time you said, how often is DM Darks' birthday? Which, you know, the answer is once a year.
Oh.
But then I would say, so often.
Oh.
But never mind.
Freudian slip, I guess.
All right.
How long is a year?
And then Dave then follows up with, you told everyone you scored a point in God Ball, right? Yes. Yes, I did talk about God Ball. And yes, I did score a point, and it was pretty awesome. This new set of rules, I got a hold of the ball, and I felt like I could actually defend it and keep it and move it around. And it was a close thing, but I actually got it to the goal through, obviously, superior skill. I was playing a bunch of losers. So it worked out really well. And then, done. So that's it. You got something on your phone?
Yeah, I actually have a few things.
All right. Hit me.
So first, from Sam, he says, beep, beep, lettuce.
Okay. Thank you, Sam.
I mean, I said, if you want us to say anything on the podcast.
Yeah, no.
All right, I have one from Mike for Aiden to read. I really have the world, I have the most awesome dad in the world, and he's not making me say that. I wubble up a dub dub him. I read it how it's written, I don't know what you want.
What do you mean? You just said you weren't being made to say that, so, thank you. I appreciate your sincere expression of love.
Yeah?
Your sincere and unforced.
Yeah.
Expression of respect and love.
If it wasn't on listener betrayal, I wouldn't have done it.
I know.
All right, next up, we've got my coworker, Trey. He says no comment this time. Cool, thanks, Trey.
Sweet, we appreciate that.
From Emily. She asks us to not shame her for being creative this time.
Wait, did we shame you last time?
Did we?
Why would we do that? We like you, Emily.
Yeah.
You're actually really cool, and you contribute, and you listen, so...
I mean, I wish you were more creative, but, you know, I mean, whatever.
You know what? I'm actually kind of offended that you would even suggest this. Seriously, what's wrong with you?
For you...
Wait, I'm working into shaming
you.
Yeah,
I got it.
Oh, okay.
For you, rank your children by a few different metrics. Best at role-playing, video games, scout stuff. Who's your favorite?
Okay. All right, wait. What's the first one?
Best at role-playing.
Best at role-playing.
It's me.
I'd just like you to know that 75% of us are in the room.
I would say best at role-playing, Aiden. He's had more experience than anyone else.
What about Jacob?
And
No,
because Jacob's moved away now, and he doesn't get to play that often. And Jacob was a pretty good role player, but we've kind of evolved things. And Aiden has had a bunch of experience, and he tends to be really pushy and dominate scenes. Which does that make you a bad role player? That you?
Well, I mean,
you're giving your brothers some space to play, but because you are so much older than they are, a lot of times the decision making comes down to you sort of influencing how things run. But, you know, look, it's... Boy, these are not fair. Emily, you're a bad person.
You disrespect your creativity.
But, Jacob, well, no, you know what? I'm going to change it to Jacob, because I forgot. Jacob, not just role-playing games, not just Pathfinder, but Jacob also does texting role-playing that I've done with him before that is actually really interesting. And he's pretty creative on that. I mean, those are innovative. So I'm going to go Jake. I'm just going to go in age order, oldest to youngest, and it's all just based on experience. There you go. So Jacob, then Aiden, then Eli, then Noah. All
right. Second medium is best at video games.
Best at video games. Rank the four of you on video games.
I would put me and Jacob on even footing, but we're only both on the top for different reasons. He's got more gumption to like 100% games and do speed runs and all that. Well, I've got more gumption to, like, branch out to actual different gaming platforms and try new things and actually gain skill sets.
Okay. Wow, you're really full of yourself.
Ouch.
I'm just saying. Yeah, actually, no, the two of them, I don't know enough about their video gaming prowess to be able to rank one over the other.
Yeah.
But I do know that both of them...
But Noah's at the bottom, because, I mean, he doesn't even own his own console.
I even have a Switch, and I'm playing it right now, you jerk! Nerd rage quickly! You do not disrespect me right now! I have a
Dad, help!
Right now!
He's had his money saved up and he got enough for his birthday that he could finally go buy his own Switch.
I feel assaulted.
So Noah now has his own video game console and he's very happy about that. Just got it literally today. So, there you go. What's our next metric?
I think it's scout stuff. Yes.
Scout stuff. Okay.
Jacob's top, I am bottom.
Jacob first, and then Eli, and then Noah, who Noah has a lot of potential, but he's really just getting into the Boy Scout stuff now. So, and now I say Jacob because he's already earned his Eagle Scout and moved on. Again, a lot of these, Jacob wins because he's got the experience. But
he's
Eli
also
is,
that miraculous star child that really can't do anything wrong.
Eli is really... I'm sorry, you have to live in that shadow.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Love you, Jacob.
But, you know, you get the podcast.
Yeah.
When I die, this is yours.
Hey, do we have any clean knives? Or?
So, anyway, Jacob already earned his eagle and moved on. Eli has taken on, eagerly taken on leadership positions within the troop and is very driven to get things going. Noah is coming up behind him.
Man, driven, but he refuses to learn to drive.
And Noah's coming up behind him. And Aiden was a quitter. So there you go.
It wasn't that I'm a quitter. It's that it didn't interest me.
Right. So yeah, it just, so you quit. Did I not say that? I think we're saying the same thing, just with different words.
Anyway,
right?
Moving on. And then the last metric is your favorite. Rank us from most to least favorite, Dad. That doesn't work here.
Crap.
Oh wait, now we have to go back to 01. No, I'm kidding. We don't have to.
Okay. So, on this last metric, to rank... I'm going to start with...
all of us on equal ground.
No. Look. Obviously, the order here is going to be... Because I'm...
Youngest to oldest.
No, the metric was facial hair, right? So, Aiden, Jacob, Eli, Noah. I mean, that's... Aiden's got a great beard. Jacob also has a good beard, but it's not as filled in. I mean, Aiden just, like, naturally at the age of 11 suddenly sprouted a full beard one morning, like a lumberjack. I don't know where this thing came from. he's just naturally beardy. It's really good. Jacob's is not quite as good, but
he's got that musketeer look.
His is still a little patchier. Like, mine was way patchy until I was, you know, 27, 28. So the fact that Jacob can get anything at all is really impressive. Eli just has that wispy, you know, teenager mustache thing that he shaves off all the time. And Noah apparently has decided not to compete.
Well,
so,
I mean,
Noah can't physically... Yeah, I was going to say, he's physically incapable of growing a beard because he's got literally 400,000 scars on his chin.
True. But he does have the... those massive clumps of armpit hair, so he's making up for it.
All right, and
Wait, no, I don't.
I know you don't. I'm kidding. That's why it's a joke.
It's just all on your back. Anyway.
Wow. All right, so Emily continues.
For me, she would like me to talk about D&D or Pathfinder for a while. She likes hearing the stories from the games. Or just the games themselves. Meta is fine.
Okay.
So I'm going to go D&D, Pathfinder, and Starfinder.
Really?
Just for...
Okay.
Just for the...
If you tell a Starfinder story, though, we have been asked to not spoil the latest adventure path.
So back when we played D&D, it was a group of Jacob, two of Jacob's friends, and me. And I was this little halfling rogue, which for the time was odd for me because I usually played these hulking, big, gladiatorial lizard men.
Yes.
But so I decided to switch it up and play a halfling rogue, which is probably my favorite character I've ever played.
And since then, you've gone back to playing giant lizards exclusively.
We'll get to that.
Okay.
Not exclusively.
No.
But so I found a mystical item called the Pipe of Desperation.
Yes.
And this pipe had random effects whenever I blew into it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing. It could do literally anything.
How did you know how to use it?
Because there was writing on one end that said, blow in this end. And then one on the other end said, not this end, dumbass.
That's right.
And so, we're chasing down this snake lady.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in a bell tower.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to a hallway about halfway up the bell tower, and these little creatures are crawling on the ceiling, walls, and floor. And there's hundreds of them, and we don't know what to do, so I leap into the front of the group and blow the Pipe of Desperation, and out of the end of it flies a bright red rhinoceros that clears the entire hallway and busts a hole in the opposite wall as the rhinoceros fell to its death.
I only vaguely remember that, but that's glorious.
It was so good, because it was supposed to be this fight that was supposed to weaken us so the boss was even harder, right. And I just rhinoceroid through it.
That's pretty good. It reminds me of when Kyle and I were really young, we played a role-playing game called Toon, which is, you're literally role-playing 10-minute Looney Tunes cartoons. And in this one, he was exploring a haunted house, and I was game master. Kyle was the only person playing. No, it was Kyle and Rob together, because there had to be two of them for
Rob
this.
Dobster?
Yeah, Rob Dobster.
Feesh Fosh, leave Bobster.
And their two characters decided that they, because they had this hallway, and there are doors on either side of the hallway, doors that faced each other. And I don't know what possessed them, but they decided that the best way to handle this pair of doors was to open them both simultaneously. And so they did. On the count of three, one, two, three, and they both fling open these doors facing each other. And so immediately a train runs through between the doors, coming out of one and then into the other and then just disappears and both doors slam shut, running over both of them and leaving them flat on the floor. That was the single funniest thing that happened to us playing Toon, because Toon is really hard to be funny in.
Really?
Cartoons are scripted for a reason. Like, to come up with that kind of crap off the top of your head and make it be actually funny is really tough. Unless you're just replaying jokes that you've already seen in other cartoons. Man, that was a hard game. So, yeah, it wound up being not that funny and not that cool most of the time, but every once in a while you got one of these moments, like opening both doors and a train came through.
So in Pathfinder, the game before our last game of Pathfinder, we were prisoners, and we escaped and formed the Blackscale Guild because one of the first things we killed was
a Blackscale Dragon.
Yes.
Yes, a young black dragon.
We didn't kill it.
Oh, that's true. You didn't.
What?
That's exactly right.
Anyway, so when we get to the real world, we run across a goblin circus caravan.
Wait. You weren't in the real world?
Well, we were in the underworld.
Gotcha, okay.
Anyway, so we tag along with this goblin circus caravan for a while. It takes us to a town called Wetfoot.
Oh, yeah, the goblin circus caravan.
Anyway, so
with the
we decided to leave town after we had a fun with our goblin friends. And so we decided to leave. And we were asked to see our papers, which, of course, we didn't have.
Right, see, they got into town inside the caravan, and so they were just luggage, and no one checked their papers then. But apparently, you also need papers when you leave town, so...
And so, they had none. Naturally, we set the town on fire.
So, naturally, they set the town on fire. That was, well, alright, not so much they as Noah with a wand of fireballs he really shouldn't have had.
yeah, we got it from the dragon.
Yeah, and so that was really funny. That was it was like the Black Scale Guild. It's not like they were a team of heroes or anything.
We were more a boogeyman than anything.
Yeah, they were, and they weren't straight up villains. And yet they left this wake of comical destruction everywhere they went. So they were pretty cool.
Yeah.
So all right, Starfinder story.
Starfinder. This has been one of my dreams to roleplay. Like, we had to kill somebody. And so, for some reason, we decided that I was going to be the tactical leader, and we pulled the entire event off as if we were a SWAT team, and it was absolutely brilliant. I wish I could go into more detail, but Starfinder is so new that I would be spoiling things for other players.
Yeah, it was very... very Shadowrun-esque, and that's, I'm sorry that you've never played Shadowrun, because it's Shadowrun, awesome world, stupid mechanics.
Okay.
Terribly written game, but beautifully written world. It's really cool. So, but sadly, Starfinder's the closest. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not sad, because Starfinder's really awesome, but yeah, that's the closest you're gonna get. So, what's next?
Alright, Emily has another one that says, also, talk about why there isn't an episode last week.
Oh, okay, let me tell you a story. I fully intended to record an episode last week. I couldn't have Aiden on because Aiden was working and the timing just didn't work out. Like, he was working long shifts 3 days
hours.
In a row. Yeah, 50 hours he put in that week. So, so I was going to just record anyway and...
Fingertips episode.
Tried to work it out. I was going to just do like a half hour, something. But we were coming home super late, and other things got in the way, and I thought, okay, all right, fine. Even though it's 11:30 at night, I'm going to sit down and do a 30-minute episode, even though it's 11:30 at night, or it's 11:15. So it doesn't matter. The exact time is irrelevant. And just know that it was late, after Noah's bedtime. That's the really relevant part of this. And so I come in. I set up my computer, I'm starting to get stuff out, and then Noah comes out of his room. I'm like, Noah, what are you doing awake at this hour? And he says, don't forget that you have to make cookies for tomorrow for school for my birthday. Ah,
not
crap.
Funny.
No,
you halted our production. How dare you?
No. In fact, what he did was he kept me from recording without you.
Because, you know, you always get so many more listeners when I'm around.
No, the feedback is really positive. Like, if something happens to you, I'm going to have to find another co-host. I don't know what to do. So
Eli would love to be on every week.
I'm thinking, you know what? Actually, I'm thinking I might just ditch you entirely, and maybe I'll just Skype Dave in for every episode.
You know, I would listen to that.
I know. I like talking to Dave, too. But no, this is working out really well.
Can we Skype Dave in anyway?
You know what? Dave, do you want to join us? All right, well, you know what, we'll talk to you after. How's that? Anyway, so that was the whole point, is that it was 11:30 at night, and it was like just this comedy of errors that things just kept getting put off and put off and put off, and finally I'm like, okay, this is it. I'm going to record it now, no matter what, even if it means I'm going to be up until 2 in the morning, and then, oh, wait, no, we still got to run to the store, we got to make cookies, crap. So, and now, none of that is to excuse the fact that it all comes down to really poor planning on my part. Obviously, poor time management skills. I should have gone ahead and recorded it Saturday morning or Friday night or something ahead of time, but I never do. So, although we're recording on Saturday now. I mean, this is a day earlier than usual. That's pretty cool.
Stephanie responded in with something that I think would be more fitting if you read. So,
okay,
the long one right there.
Wait a minute. Why do I have to read this one? All right, drop me in the middle of the Gobi Desert, bury me in a goddamn cave on the moon, and somehow my mother would find a way to call me and ask me for a favor. A quote from Michael Weston. And then below that it says, I'm watching Burn Notice.
Yeah, okay.
All right, cool.
Last on my list.
All right.
Is, my friend Tim, who says, discuss the use of practical effects versus visual effects in film and TV.
And how artists these days don't get the credit they deserve.
I was going to save that for a...
Oh, okay. Sorry. Imagine I didn't say that. All right. So, the use of practical effects versus visual effects in film and TV.
I.e. making a puppet versus inserting a puppet on screen using a computer.
Right.
And so, old Yoda versus new Yoda.
I was going to use Yoda as an example. Let me tell you that... Old Yoda and Episode 8 Yoda, he looks like a Muppet.
Yeah.
Like there is no doubt every moment that he's on screen that he's a Muppet. And therefore, as much as I enjoy Yoda as a character and as much as I have enjoyed all of these movies, I am willingly suspending my disbelief and pretending that he's not so obviously a Muppet.
Maybe the end of his life cycle is just a Muppet.
Right, well, that's possible. Look, I can tell the end is near because some guy just put his hand in my ass. That's... well, that's what happens when you become a Muppet.
Whoa, I'm getting old!
So... But CGI Yoda was creepy and unnatural.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like CGI Yoda, a CGI puppet, dancing all over the screen with his lightsaber either. So,
I've been thinking about recently, when Yoda is on Luke's back,
yes,
Mark Hamill had to have the willpower of a god to have another man's hands that close to his ass while they're performing.
To have not just his hands, it's the fact that Frank Oz, or some puppeteer, is crouched down behind him. And working that puppet up his back.
Maybe he Bon Jovi'd it and put some potpourri down his pants.
Why am I not thinking of David Bowie?
That's what I meant.
David Bowie from Labyrinth.
80s rock stars, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Yes, they're virtually identical, Bon Jovi and David Bowie.
Isn't that like the big argument?
No.
Oh. Then who's like Bon Jovi's like, you either like one or you like the other.
I have no idea.
Oh, okay, whatever.
Yeah, I got nothing on that one. Anyway, when he was on the set of Labyrinth, he tells a story about how he was so worried about the puppeteers working so close to his ass that he jammed a big wad of potpourri into his shorts to make sure that it didn't stink down there. And in doing so, that's the enormous package that the Goblin King has.
Is that really?
Labyrinth. Yeah. That's why he has such an enormous package, is he has a big wad of potpourri jammed down there, according to David Bowie, and you can't argue with a dead man. So, that's the way the story goes. Look, here's the thing, is I have a lot of respect for practical effects. I have a lot of respect for a lot of really, really cool things that have been done with practical effects. Go back and watch John Carpenter's The Thing. That is an amazing movie, and that is amazing stuff, but also... just know that whenever you're looking at it, it's obviously fake. I mean, really amazing. All right. And you're looking at it going, yeah, but God, it's such an effective fake. And I'm pretending that it's real for the sake of this movie. So therefore, it's still really scary and creepy, but it's still obviously fake.
Now,
the tree swallowing the kid in Poltergeist. So fake. So bad.
The wolf in Werewolf of London.
Right.
So, just a bear head on a stick.
While I appreciate the artistry of it, in most cases now we've gotten to the point where, yeah, but CGI makes it look better.
But I will post the counter argument of Mad Max Fury Road.
Mad Max Fury Road was spectacular.
And all practical.
That's true. That's true. That was very, very little CGI.
Yeah.
In that movie. And that was... And I think the combination of practical effects enhanced around the edges by CGI, I think is really some of the some of the best stuff, but, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know, for example, look at the Deadpool 2 trailer, and, I mean, is Cable's entire arm really CGI'd in for the whole movie, or are they just pretending that Cable's arm is CGI'd in?
Have you not seen the...
For the purposes of that trailer.
On Before the Post, they show a scene from the trailer, and he's just wearing a green sleeve.
Yeah, no, I saw that. That's the whole point, is that Deadpool is supposedly watching his own trailer, and here comes Cable with just that green sleeve,
yeah.
And he starts complaining that, wait, whoa, we can't get the effects done? What the hell is this? And then we see it, but I'm wondering, okay, but it's a metal arm. Like, they couldn't just put a metal arm on him in practical effects. He couldn't just be wearing it around. They have to CGI in.
Have you seen any of the, Before the Post for literally any Avengers movie?
No.
Most of the entire movie.
Wait, well, stop. If you're going to tell me that Hulk is CGI, I'm not listening anymore.
I assume
that Mark Ruffalo is just super jacked for those movies.
In battle scenes, 90% of what you see in battle scenes is just the actors lazily doing those moves in a massive green room.
I know. It's just a green room with a bunch of actors in silly costumes.
And one of them shows the actors charging at each other, and Black Panther has his arms back as if he's Naruto, and it looks so good.
Okay, I'm saying that, yes, there's a lot of respect to be had for practical effects, but also CGI is getting to the point where it looks really good, too. So there's a balance.
Mm-hmm.
So, is that the end?
He has one more question is... And how the artists these days don't get the credit they deserve.
I assume that he was talking about the special effects artists.
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe. Or you've been talking about artists in general. Who knows?
I think that was all a single sentence.
Yes.
Yes. So, look, I have no idea. I wouldn't have been able to name you any special effects artists before this, and I certainly can't name any now, so yeah. I have no idea.
But again,
they don't get any credit at all.
Right.
That's how it goes.
They get their name in a big scroll at the end of the movie.
No, that's true.
That's what everyone else gets. I mean, why should they be any different?
That is all the credit they need. That is exactly right.
I'm joking.
Wait. I do know one special effects artist. What's that guy's name? Harryhausen? Is that the guy's name?
I know one guy. What's his name?
That he did, he was the one that did Total Recall with Arnold Schwarzenegger. He did Clash of the Titans. He did, and he was a genius of practical effects for many, many years. Again, go watch the original Clash of the Titans now. Cheesy. I mean, you know, look, impressive in its day, and yet, you know, they don't age well. It's tough to be able to keep up. I mean, but for what they had, amazing. So, you know, for what it's worth. All right, now are we done?
Let me just check my list again.
Oh, yeah. See, I say done so that they stop sending me new stuff.
Yes, we're done.
All right, sweet. All right, then, that's it.
Well, I don't have them all in, like, one big thread. I have to check conversations independently.
I understand. So, say goodnight, Noah.
Goodnight.
Say goodnight, Eli.
Goodnight.
Aiden.
Good night.
And R2. You guys are the best. We love you. You're awesome. Thank you for coming around. We will see you next week. It's been great.